My fellow Sega fans, as your Sega Guys podcast host, I... Who disrupts my opening narration?
Opening narration? This is bad comedy.
Segaholic, is that you?
Here's a hint! Sega!
Mate, welcome back, welcome back. It's great to have you back on the Sega Guys podcast, the virtual highlight of podcasts. Objectively bad, subjectively brilliant. How you been, mate? How is the new arrival? How's the family?
Absolutely fantastic, mate. I am buzzing to be back behind the microphone. It's been way too long. It's, as I said, you know, 6 weeks. I said 6 weeks off. It's turned into the best part of 12 or 13 weeks, but, you know, it needs must. Wee one's doing great. As I say, she's 12 weeks old at the time of recording. Doing absolutely brilliant. You know, couple of bags under the eyes from some sleepless nights to be expected. You know, it's par for the course, but, yeah. Kept my eye in, kind of working away at some videos. Obviously, the Sega Saturn, you know, didn't
just
fail.
Just a couple of little videos.
Just a couple of little videos, you know. I'd been kind of chipping away at that one whenever I could. Here and
that
there.
That was some gargantuan project, mate. I mean, it took you. I mean, obviously, you had they had the Dreamcast exclusives and a couple of the other Dreamcast videos that you did before.
Yep.
They were all done before.
Yep.
You did your look, took your break, but then you were offline from the podcast. You were working on this magnum opus, this Sega Saturn video, which is absolutely phenomenal.
Thank you.
Gone great guns. Thanks for everyone for the feedback on it. It's been fantastic. But yeah, mate. It was outstanding work, so well done with that.
Thank you very much. I say, it's just something. I think I had to follow one from your Sega Saturn success story video. I think the two of those, they go quite well. Obviously, Dave did the kind of change the narrative trailer, and we've kind of piggybacked off of that in a way and kind of built on that. It was just great to kind of get that message out there. I say, well over 10,000 views at the time of speaking, so. In the video, I said, I know that I'm shouting into the storm, hoping to be heard. You know, it looks as if we are being heard, about 350-odd comments on it. So it's causing debate.
It is.
You know, the overwhelming majority of comments have been positive on it. But I'm chuffed with it. I'm proud of it. I don't think I'll top it. I think it's possibly the best work I'll do for the channel. So I've peaked, mate. I've peaked. But I've just got a wee videos that I did, you know, in the meantime, stuff like, you know, any kind of wee homebrew stuff like was a GTA 3 video I did. There was another one Doom 64 was the other one as well.
Yeah.
Managed to kind of get a couple of those quick reaction videos out. So now working on something else for next month, a very special date next month. So this might actually go out around about the same time as it, or after it, or just before it, I don't know, but...
It's going to be 2 weeks.
Aye, so I'm kind of working away on that just now. Got all my footage that I need, just kind of putting the script together and getting my archive footage, so I'm trying not to turn that into something massive, right, because that's the problem, right, and I can see how Nick ended up going down the rabbit hole of making really detailed videos, because you get an idea for a video, like this one that I'm doing just now, and it starts off quite basic, and then you go... But what if I expanded it into this? And, you know all too well, mate, your Knights video, your Street Fighter 2 Champion Edition video, all the same, you know, it just kind of grows horns. But it happens because we love doing it. You know, that's why it happens, because you start researching for these videos to kind of expand on the knowledge that you've already got. And then before you know it, you find out things and you feel that should be something that's in the video to let people know. And it just, it's brilliant. It's passion that drives it. But... Yeah, I'm buzzing to be back, mate. It's just been way too long. I can't believe we're like almost heading towards like the last week of September already. Where has the year gone, man? But let's go.
I know, mate. It's flown by. It's flown by. Yeah, we're in the last week of September as we're recording this. I think this is going to go out at the end of September. October, we've got some massive anniversaries coming in. So I hope everyone enjoys the various celebrations for that. And the Saturn will be 30, and then it will be Winterfest. And obviously we're going to, you know, much like your video, Ed, people think we talk about the Saturn too much. We sell these false narratives, apparently. But if you want us to stop talking about the Sega,
we're fucking not.
So we're going to continue doing what we're doing. But we're like, well, We might touch on the Sega Saturn today, mate, but today's topic is a game that I don't think we've actually spent an awful lot of time talking about. Certainly hasn't been on a podcast before. We've done a couple of videos reports on it. There was my 32X video, but this is a discussion around the legendary, iconic virtual racing. And, mate, it's a great one to bring you back for. such a legendary game.
Right, and I think whenever we spoke on WhatsApp about it, it was basically because if you think of all the discussions that you get and that you've had recently, so obviously like Sega Rally is very prominent in people's minds because of obviously Open Jump and Panda's documentary, you know, and obviously DDI Rally's doing, you know, their version as well. And we'll come back to DDI in due course. But the racing games, again, Sega Touring Car was kind of in the kind of public consciousness because of the Shiro Community Challenge. We've had Manx TT out there because Sharka did, you know, the challenge, the racing challenge on that. And it just seems like virtual racing doesn't quite get spoken about as often as it should, despite the fact that there are several tribute, you know, games out there as well, in the works. And one's come out, one's about to come out, and we'll get to them. So it was just to kind of have more of a chat about, you know, virtual racing, the various ports, and kind of chat about its legacy, really, you know, and why it's had such an impact in terms of, like, it's influencing these indie developers to want to recreate it. What was it about it that made them want to recreate it, you know, on modern hardware with modern technology?
Yeah, absolutely, mate. And for anyone that is unaware of virtual racing, it was launched in 1992, which, wow, over 3 decades, like 32 years ago, August 1992 was the first time it was released. It was developed in tandem with the Sega Model 1 board. So, you know, flat shaded polygons back when they were kind of the top, the state-of-the-art visuals. And there were, obviously, there was games like Hard Driving from Atari, Winning Run from Namco that did, they were kind of a mix between flat shaded polygons and Winning Run, especially. You had the kind of the 2D or the sprite based car HUD that you'd go around in, so there was a little bit of a disconnect there. But virtual racing was, it was evolved. I think Yu Suzuki was quoted as saying it was the next step from the super scale. You know, we spoke about Yu Suzuki and his works and how he's been so influential in the game industry. And, you know, when he created Hang On, he created something absolutely spectacular from a visual perspective. The sort of smooth scrolling that had been demonstrated in that game had never been done before. And we saw him, you know, get new games out that just pushed the envelope a little bit further. We had the Outrun, we had Power Drift, games like that that followed on. Again, more legendary games. And this was to him the very next step. And for me, it doesn't seem like a step. It seems like a gigantic leap from what we had before. I mean, he's essentially gone from super scalers and then leaping over both Hard Driving and Winning Run to just create this visual feast.
Aye, and it's also tapping into what at the time, if you think of like what Formula One was at the time, you know, you're talking about 92, so like your Mansells, and obviously Schumacher have been coming through as well. He's kind of, maybe was that early enough for Schumacher at Benetton in 92? He was then maybe 94, 95, but you know, you still obviously your Senna, Prost, all these kind of your legendary racers of that era. And F1 was very much moving into really major popularity. Like, again, I've not watched F1 since Michael Schumacher retired the first time round, but like in that kind of early mid-90s, well, late 90s, whenever it was him and versus Mika Häkkinen, and you had David Coulthard and Eddie Irvine as the kind of buffers battling each other, it was brilliant. So, you know, tapping into again the popular growing motorsport of the era, and then not just tapping into it but trying to merge again, as he would do so often, that kind of merging the realism and getting just enough realism in there to make it, you know, tangible for people who love the sport, but also adding that arcade gameplay. So you were merging the absolute best of both. And the way it comes together, mate, is just, it's absolutely phenomenal. As you say, the jump to go from, as you say, super scalers over, you know, like Hard Driving and whatnot, and then get to that, the frame rate, the fluidity, the sharpness of those, you know, flat shaded polygons, the scenery, okay, the trees are big triangles, but they've become iconic. You know, it's part of the Golden Gate Bridge kind of idea as well.
Yeah.
That's iconography now. That's what that's become. Like, if you think virtual racing and you think in your mind, you can see that red and white car, the pointy trees and the bridge. You know, it's just, it's become so iconic. So it's an incredible game. And as you say, that the jump is, again, it's, we talk about like Yu Suzuki with this, with the Model 1 stuff. Virtua Fighter did it as well. You think again, 93, what you were playing in the home in 93, and then you walk in an arcade and you see that, it doesn't just take a leap. It's just light years ahead in terms of where it's went. So, but aye, Virtua Racing, I just, again, does he get the credit it deserves? I don't think. It really doesn't.
No, if you think about what we were playing at home at the time, I mean, in 1992, you were playing, this was 3 months before Sonic the Hedgehog 2. It was, you know, 2 months after the Street Fighter 2 port came to the Super Nintendo, or around the same time as Super Mario Kart. So they're the sort of games that were playing on the cutting edge consoles at the time. And, you know, the arcade was just echelons above it. It was absolutely phenomenal. Now, it's quite funny how it all came together, because it was initially kind of just a concept. It was kind of a proof of concept when they were developing the board. You know, what can we develop alongside it? Let's make a racing demo. And of course, that demo evolved. Interestingly, the handling model was actually based on a Bugatti sports car and not a Formula One car. So they quoted that they modeled the handling on a Bugatti, but obviously they modeled it on an F1 just for recognition. But that kind of blends together, because what the team said at the time is that the overriding goal wasn't correct to create essentially a simulation, but just to make driving fun. But I think that does a discredit to what virtual racing does, because, I mean, yeah, it's tremendous fun. Back in 1992, it was stunning and unlike anything else, but it was also far more realistic than any other game at the time. So it sort of was a simulation, an arcade simulation, but still one that was incredibly fun. Would you agree?
Aye, it's the handling of virtual racing, it verges on kind of arcade, but it can be unforgiving as well. It's like it will tell you off if you know touch an embankment or a bit of grass, or go off the track, or go too heavy on the brakes. The game punishes you. It's not as forgiving as, like, I think Outrun and Hang On are very forgiving games. You know, it's okay if you hit a, you know, an advertising board, your Ferrari will go flying up in there and send you packing. But no, virtual racing will definitely punish you. It's a fine line, and I think that's part of what makes it fun to master as well. And it's also part of what I think one of the indie games that we'll come to, I think that's what it captures quite well. It's not quite on the same level, but it's close. You can feel what they're trying to do in terms of that kind of balance between arcades and kind of more realistic handling. And then the fact that they've also added handling modes in there as well that will come to kind of help. Obviously, that may have been in their thinking whenever they made it, is that, do they want to have more arcade? Do they want to have more simulation? So giving players the chance to pick that different style. But it's very finely balanced, mate.
It really is. And yeah, it wasn't, even like if you played Winning Run, you know, I think it was 88, 89. It was quite, it's impressive for the time, but it doesn't have the sort of fluidity or the physics that virtual racing does. You feel kind of rooted to the track, and similar with hard driving, not so rooted. It feels a little bit stiff, whereas virtual racing is just an absolute joy. But mate, when did you first clap eyes on virtual racing? Did you see the arcade version first?
Nope. My first experience of virtual racing was the Saturn version.
Oh, really?
And it was a tatty copy that cost me £12 in Game Zone in Partick. And whoever had this must have abused the shit out of it, because they were so annoyed with it. Because, mate, the cardboard sleeve, if you think you see some bad cardboard sleeves on Saturn PAL games now, this thing had seen some battles, which is probably why it was so cheap. But at that time, I had nothing to go on in terms of, you know, comparison, you know. So whenever I played it, the first thing it hit me was the number of tracks. You know, it was quite fleshed out. Obviously, the Saturn version being done by Time Warner. you know, without any source code at all. Just, here's an arcade machine, have a shot, try and copy it. Have a shot, try and copy it. It's like, nah. But because I got it way after, like, Sega Rally and Daytona, it didn't quite hit the mark with me at all. So I think, for me, my first impression of Virtua Racing may have been similar to your first impression of Sega Rally. It's like, picked it up, tried it, and thought, nah, this isn't for me, man. This is garbage, man. This is shit. It's like, it wasn't until you kind of, you learn as you kind of get more into playing the games and realizing what the platform you've got and who Sega are and what they did and whatnot, that you realize, all right, okay, that's an arcade game. And I didn't find out until years down the line that it was, like, obviously the stuff about no source code. Now, you don't know that as a teenager. That's not even in your thinking, no. You know what I mean? So that's way down the line. That's like years and years and years away before you find that kind of stuff out. But that certain game, I just thought, it's a bit, it's all right. Did not hit the spot with me, but it eventually did.
No, I mean, I played it in the arcades myself, but just coming back to the Sega Saturn version, that was, I picked that up, and it's quite funny that you say you don't know this stuff as a teen. You know, you can read stuff in magazines, but they're not going to tell you the whole story. So, you know, I first played Virtual Racing in an arcade in a Butlins in Bognor Regis, and that would have been 94, 95. So I think the Mega Drive version was probably already out by that point. And of course, you know, it was 70 quid. You know, there's like the Asmund Gold clip, $70. But, you know, that's like 140 quid if you adjust for inflation. But, you know, it looks amazing. But the thing was, I couldn't justify it with my parents and stuff. And I think it came out around the same time as Sonic the Hedgehog 3 in 1994. So Sonic 3 was 60 quid, Virtual Racing was 70. It's just like no chance. But yeah, I played it in the arcade. Absolutely blew me away. It wasn't quite the deluxe one, but it had a massive 50-inch screen. Absolutely gorgeous. It was a quid ago. And I think I had a fiver on. I think I spent 3 quid on there. Lasted about 10 minutes. And it was amazing. But obviously, I didn't play it again because I had a few issues with my Mega Drive. I didn't buy many more games for it when I got my Sega Saturn. I didn't see it for cheap anywhere. It wasn't really in any second-hand shops. Didn't have a 32X. So my first thought of like playing Virtua Racing in the home was the Sega Saturn version. Picked that up probably for about the same price in Computer Exchange, CEX they're now called. But they were a proper gaming shop then. Brought it home. And I didn't know the kind of the history behind it. But I just thought, this isn't very fun compared to what I remember. Maybe it's because since then I've played Daytona and I've played Sega Rally. But it didn't click with me. And I think I traded it towards my Dreamcast in the end. The Saturn version is quite difficult because I love the idea that you can level your car up, you go through this whole career mode and you get, you know, you graduate through the cars. But mate, going through those initial races in the go-kart, I find them excruciating because they take about 10 minutes to do one race. You know, you're going about 30 miles an hour around a 6 kilometer long course, and you're just like, it's like, this isn't exciting.
No, as you say, it's like taking a go-kart with an unbug ring into it. It's like, we'll get there eventually. Like, just keep going. It's like, nah, it's you admire what they tried to do. They tried to flesh it out and expand on it and make it more of a home version. And that's admirable, but no, just stick to the core stuff, you know. Just don't be trying to add stuff like that and just, as you say, make excruciating.
Yeah.
Like Gran Turismo's really licenses. Fucking things, man. Like, stick your driving test before you sit your driving test. Break in this bit. Don't break too soon. Break too late. It's like driving a banged up Corsa. You know, if that's art imitating real life or vice versa, mate, that's what ended up happening to me. That's what I drive now. It's like, doing my driving test. Come on!
It was in Gran Turismo. It was the little Suzuki, wasn't it?
You start off with. Box with wheels. No.
So they got the idea from Virtual Racing on the Sega Saturn. That's what Polyphony were trying to ape.
That's it. I just stopped short of giving you a go-kart to get on an F1 track, though.
Yeah. But, mate, you played it on, have you played it on MAME or anything like that since the arcade version?
Aye, it was emulation when I first actually played the arcade version. And it's a game. See, I think with Virtua Race, it's a game that it's kind of come into my life more in terms of recent years. And I think that's what kind of drove this kind of whole idea for this conversation, is because we're saying it's underrated and maybe underappreciated, because I haven't given it the time and respect that it deserves either. I slept on it. I just let it pass, emulation to play the arcade version. And then, later on, it hasn't. I mean, I didn't pick it up in terms of any kind of modern version until we had a Switch Lite, maybe 3 years ago now. And I got it on the store on there, and that was the first time I'd actually went back to it since those emulation days and those obviously Sega Saturn days. So it's not just a case of us sitting here going, it's underappreciated and you should do better. I slept on it. I overlooked it. I underappreciated it for a long time. So it was emulation to play the arcade version. Never ever got to play it in the arcades at all. Never seen it. So, that's one that I clocked it in your Japanese arcade video, and I spotted it. I was like, ooh, and it's there. I'd love it if maybe Arcade Club were to get, Virtua Racing in, and then we could try it out next time we're down there. But it's just a game I never got to experience in the arcade, mate. So it's one regret. Got to enjoy Virtua Fighter on that big deluxe cabinet with a massive screen. I would have loved to have experienced Virtua Racing on that as well.
It's a shame, mate. Yeah, and I think you're spot on, and I think it is something similar just for all video game fans, really. Because if you look at the timeline when Virtual Racing came out, you've got Virtual Racing comes out and it blows everyone away. This is the Model 1 debut and it's absolutely phenomenal, and it still was phenomenal when I played it in 1994. But between that, the very next year, you've got Ridge Racer that comes out, which Namco, again, was their response to Virtual Racing. And then kind of piloting that very same year in 1993, getting a preview in Japanese arcades and then getting a full release in 1994, is Daytona USA. So Virtual Racing's time in the sun was a little bit all too brief. It was the cutting edge of video games, the cutting edge of racing games and visuals, but only for what is really a brief window. And I think it speaks a lot about the rate of change that you had back then, that you had technology like Model 1 that was being eclipsed in 2 years. What major graphical technological advancements have we had in the modern day in the last couple of years? Like ray tracing, FSSR on...
Path tracing?
DLSS.
What the hell that is?
Path tracing. You've got nothing like the sort of move from flat shaded polygons to texture maps. So it's a shame that it didn't really get its time in the sun, although it did get a second lease of life through the various ports. We talked about Saturn briefly, and we'll talk about the others as we go through. But I think it's a it's just absolutely fantastic. And even going back, playing the arcade game and playing the various ports now, it's absolutely phenomenal. I mean, the free courses, you've got Big Forest, which is almost the perfect beginner course. You've got Bay Bridge, which, it's the difficulty curve across the three tracks is nigh on perfect. And they've all got those beautiful kind of visual aspects. You've got kind of the fairground and the bridge in Big Forest. You've obviously got the bridge in Bay Bridge. And then you've got the kind of the hairpin and the little... the Acropolis in Acropolis, and it's just absolutely phenomenal. And I don't think before then really you had that sort of, and you said it before yourself, mate, that sort of iconography in a racing game, which makes every course so distinctive.
And what you said there about the kind of the time it had in the sun, so to speak, you're right, it's actually quite baffling whenever you think back to it, that change of pace, like you said. You said earlier in the show that Virtua Racing was originally designed as a test, a prototype. And even though it did become a full retail game and it did have a full arcade release, in effect, it still was, despite getting that full release, it still pretty much was a prototype. It was a test, you know, because as you say, mate, 92, it comes out. 93, Daytona USA is getting its, you know, public tests in Japan. 94 gets rolled out worldwide. People are going 60 FPS in texture maps. Who gives a shit about, you know, flat shaded polygon racers? Get the old stuff away. And again, it's as if in Virtua Fighter, the original Virtua Fighter has aged better in terms of the way it's remembered than what Virtua Racing is. You know, and I don't know if it's because obviously Virtua Fighter kind of continued on its path, you know, and had various sequels, and obviously you'd fight Vipers in the Last Bronx, but Virtua Fighter still remained the kind of the king franchise for Sega for fighting games, whereas Virtua Racing, obviously then you had Daytona, then you have the Sega Rally, and those two have become the sort of behemoths. You know, you may have, you've had, you know, Sega Touring Car, you've had Scud Race, Daytona 2, these kind of games have came out since, but if you ask people, you had a game of family fortunes, and it was name a Sega arcade racing game, and you said Daytona or Sega Rally, the chances are, our survey says, top answer for one of them, you know. So it's, it very much, it did get treated almost like a prototype, not just, not so much by Sega, but by the public. It was like, that was cool, but now we've got this new shiny shit and we like this better.
Yeah, I know. it's crazy. And but then the things it did, obviously, like the sweeping camera angles, the replays, the whole virtual camera where, you know, you had in the arcade, you had the four buttons, red, green, blue and yellow,
flashing away
to change your viewpoint, which, you know, that carried on through Daytona USA and Scud Race. But then, you know, Scud Race is kind of remembered as, it's kind of its own thing, but it's still kind of a spiritual follow-up to Daytona in a way. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Daytona 2, and it's the Daytona series, which has become the one that's more synonymous with Sega, more iconic. But Virtua Racing didn't. You know, where Virtua Fighter offered, and we've talked before about how much Virtua Fighter steered the industry at the time, and how influential it was because of, you know, the articulation, the animation of actual humans. As crazy as it sounds, it wasn't a thing before Virtua Fighter. But that was kind of building on the technologies that Virtua Racing started. It was still a gigantic leap in terms of what you could do in a video game. But Virtua Racing, again, with the sweeping camera angles, with the way it moves, you know, with the physics models and everything like that, it really was the starting point for that and modern racers. And when I play Virtua Racing and I mess around with the views and I go to the in-car view, it's astonishing how similar it is to a modern driving experience. You know, in 32 years... it still holds up phenomenally well.
The kind of the camera that shows you, like, just you get the big, those lovely big square edged wheels that you see spinning around. I love the sharp edges on the wheels. It just looks brilliant. But I see that view, that kind of that cockpit view. See the sheer feeling of speed. Pardon me at that as well. It's phenomenal. And with that view, you've got to have learned the layout of the tracks, because you can't really see the corners coming, you know. And again, that's how it would be in an F1 car. You think how low you are to the road.
Yeah.
You know, they've got co-drivers in their ear telling them, talking them through the track. These guys got to do thousands and thousands of laps of testing every year to get these tracks in their mind. And again, Virtua Racing nailed that. If you're playing that view, you need to be damn good at the game. You need to know your apexes, you need to know where your turns are coming up. Yeah, you've got a grid or a map to show you where they're coming, but you take your eye off the road to look at that, you could be in a wall and off the embankment. So, you know, it just captures that sheer sense of speed and that realism as well of an actual F1 car, just because of how low down you are.
Yeah. And you can't just hoon it around the track on your first go.
You can't.
As you said before, mate, it is punishing. You know, you've got to learn the tracks as much as you have to. I'd say as much as you have to in Sega Rally, it applies equally for Virtua Racing. You need to learn the tracks. I think Daytona USA is arguably more forgiving. doing virtual
I'd say
racing,
so.
I think. I think even the beginner's track virtual racing, if you don't know the course and you think that you can just go in and wing it,
Still
you need
cold.
to No, you need to learn the track, and that's what's amazing about it. That's why it's, there's a level of mastery about it, and perfectly playable, enjoyable to pick up, difficult to master, and even if you get around the whole course before the timer runs out, because it's one of these rare games where it, I think, again, more difficult than others to get around, do your 5 laps before the timer runs out. But even if you get there, I'm rubbish at racing games most of the time. And I end up like fifth or sixth. I think on the 32X version, I got first place a couple of times, but it's challenging, and it's a sort of game. Yes, there's only three tracks, and we'll talk about the home ports in a sec. But you could conceivably play it for a very long time, just like Sega Rally.
Aye, I love that game over. Game over. It's like, it's just pure, like almost borderline insultingly slow. As if it says game over slow, but it insinuates that you're just too slow. It's like, it's challenging. Like, think with Sega Rally in Daytona, you can get your way around beginner track without, you can have a couple of bumps. You know, Sega Rally, you don't have to take your finger off the accelerator. Well, apart from the last corner, you need to drop to third, then sweep across. But virtual racing, there's no chance. Like, you know yourself, that is it, the corner after you come through over the bridge, and there's a left hander with a rock face, and like it looks like you can just sweep round it.
Oh yeah,
Nope.
you
Nope.
will spin.
You will
You will
spin,
spin.
and then not only will you spin, but if you're far enough ahead or far enough up the grid, you'll spin and somebody will hit you.
Yep.
You know, so it's as they say, it's deceptive, very deceptive.
Is, and the just to pick up on the sound design before we start talking about some of the ports, mate. But the sound design is fantastic. It's great because it's kind of unique, because you don't have a soundtrack that sees you through the whole course.
Yep.
You have little musical interludes when you hit a checkpoint, when you get a time boner, when you
Time,
when you,
time
you
boner.
time boner.
That's it.
As you get your time boner, you get your little musical
Do
interlude, and
do
it's
do
always quite difficult.
do 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 do.
It's brilliant, and there's you've got the game over. You got the obviously the checkpoint sound is quite different, and then you've got the title, which is going virtual racing comes in like that, and that's absolutely fantastic. It's an absolute joy, just on every conceivable level. It's just pure classic Sega arcade racing action, and yeah, it's criminal that it doesn't get mentioned as much as kind of Daytona USA or Sega Rally. I'd say, as far as playability is concerned, it's definitely up there with the two of them. I think it's probably a little more challenging, and maybe a little bit more unfashionable, I think. I think if it's a popularity contest, unfortunately, it's not as popular. But in terms of what it did and what it still does, and the fact that it still plays like a modern arcade racer, absolute classic.
I think Virtua Racing will have that exact same thing that Sega Rally has got in terms of time, shaving seconds off your time, which again, being an F1 kind of influenced kind of racer, you would expect that, because F1's all about, shaving seconds off your time, getting faster, getting pole position ahead of your rival and all that kind of stuff. So, it's comparable with Sega Rally that way, but what Daytona brings in the whole power sliding and gear drifting and stuff like that as well. So that's a totally different experience. But I mean, Daytona's got time attack elements in it as well. You can, there's people that play, Daytona competitively that are, hell bent on shaving seconds off their time, no doubt about it. But I think well, Virtua Racing does have that hook in it as well, if you want to kind of go and find it. But it's a lot more unforgiving than the other two.
I think so. So yeah, absolutely a classic, and obviously it had to come home at some point. There was a lot of clamoring for it. Didn't seem to be possible, but the first place it came home, mate, was the humble Sega Mega Drive, courtesy of the Sega Virtual Processor, or Sega Virtua Processor, Which is probably worth talking about on its own. I know you wanted to talk about a bit about this, but it was originally going to be a pass-through cartridge, not unlike, say, Sonic and Knuckles, and unlike a, not unlike a certain mushroom-shaped pass-through that would come later. Which, yeah, with the Super FX chip in Starwing, it felt like Sega were responding, and obviously, you know, Super Nintendo carts. You've got your main game slot. And then you had, if you had special chips, they came on the sides. Obviously, the Mega Drive didn't have that, so it had to be built on the board. And it was quite interesting that they were thinking of doing it as a pass-through. I remember rumours that, and this was obviously late 93, when they were talking about it being a pass-through cart, possibly being on Virtua Fighter, which was kind of in the very early throes of, in the arcade at the time. Would have been interesting. A more cost-effective 32X, would it have flown? I'm not sure, mate.
Aye, I mean, first of all, I picked up a copy, you know, on the Mega Drive and had great fun with it. The PAL version doesn't like being switched to 60 hertz, it flickers. So I found that out to my cost. The Mega Drive obviously switched and put the cartridge in and flicked it up, and it was like, ah, my eyes, what's going on? It's like, but it plays fine at 50 hertz. It's a bit letterboxed and whatnot, as you'd expect. But it's remarkable to see a game of that magnitude running on a stock Mega Drive. Okay, it's getting the help off the SVP, but it's very much, we've said it before, we've touched on it, it's very much to the Mega Drive what Daytona is to the Saturn. Because despite the lower resolution, the lower polygon count, you know, the frame rate, it still feels like, if you play the Saturn version and it looks great in terms of comparison to the Mega Drive version, and then you go and you pick up the Mega Drive version, have a shot of that, it's the feel of it. Like, it's just, it feels so much more responsive. Now, that kind of cockpit view that we spoke about earlier on the Mega Drive, man, that is a challenge. Right? Again, because the camera's low, the frame rate's a bit lower, and man, you really need to be good at the game to play the Mega Drive version like that. But in terms of as a pass-through, obviously it's not got the kind of gubbins of a 32X, you know, the larger size of a 32X allowed it to have SH2s and whatnot, and, you know, and be a lot more expansive and do more. But you've got to wonder, for what point in the life the Mega Drive was at, would it have been, surely it would have been more cost-effective to use the SVP to do these kind of ports of, like, you're doing Virtua Racing. I believe Daytona was actually muted at one point. I'm sure I read that on Sega Retro. I'm sure I read it. It was like Daytona USA was thought about. I don't think that would ever have flown, but Virtua Fighter 1 could have possibly been attempted. Star Wars Arcade, again, maybe. Wouldn't have been 32X levels, but I think it might just have been enough, mate. It might just have been enough to add a wee bit of life at the tail end to say, right, next gen's coming, you know, Saturn's out in Japan, this is what you're going to get with a full fat next gen experience, but on your humble Mega Drive I've got this SVP that gives you a tiny taste of what these games could be like at a lower frame rate and a lower resolution. It might have worked. You know what I mean? It might just have, and it would have saved a shitload of money and hassle and loss of, like, consumer confidence. Excuse me. Just having a baby, by the way, man. I'm sitting here, I'm fighting yawns, I'm tanning a siren brew, something rotten, by the way. Stay awake. But I do wonder if the SDP would have had enough grunt in it to just see out those kind of final maybe 12, 18 months of the Mega Drive, and give gamers just a wee taste rather than going spend hundreds on a mushroom that'll be discontinued and lose consumer confidence and all that shite that happened that we know about.
Yeah, it's another one of those what ifs, isn't it? And I think it may have gone down a little bit better if it came out with Virtua Racing in early 94. you know, before the Sega Saturn is on the shelves. And I think the thing about Mega Drive Virtual Racing is you can see, we'll still see that it's not so much constrained by the SVP, it's constrained by the hardware itself.
Yeah.
I think the biggest issue that I have with the Mega Drive port, and it's an absolutely sensational port, but the biggest issue I have with it is the colours, the differing. Everything is very differed to make up for the fact that the Mega Drive's colour output is a million light years away from the Sega Model 1. But it's still a sensational port. And, you know, if it was a pass-through port, maybe if it was like a £70 release, but you had the cart and you had the pass-through in one package, and so you go, coming soon, you know, Doom for the SVP, or I think Star Wars Arcade would have been a real challenge. But, you know, if you had Virtua Fighter, maybe it would have been very scaled back. But, you know, it would have been interesting. But yeah, the port itself, and it was great that you picked it up, mate. It's also on the Mega Drive Mini 2.
Yes.
Which is cool. And again, a lot to come back to what you're talking about just now, though, mate, about the in-car view. Yeah, it's a challenge. The drawing distance, the frame rate, makes it hard. But wow. You know, the fact that really, because you can see the hands up like that, hands on the wheel, spinning around. How long was it between that and actually seeing that again in a video game? I mean, honestly, it wasn't in Ridge Racer, it wasn't in Sega Rally, it wasn't in Daytona. And I can't think of another game that it's in until we get to like Forza Motorsport 3 on the Xbox 360. I'm sure there's games before that, but really, that's when, you know, the Xbox 360, PS3 generation, because Gran Turismo 5 had it as well. And that felt like the time when, you know, the big boys, the big heavyweights of, you know, Forza Motorsport and Gran Turismo, when the big premium developers were finally comfortable that, yeah, we've got enough grunt in our machines now that we can show the interior of the car on the hands of the wheel. But Mega Drive's doing it in 1994.
I
it's challenging, but it's playable.
Exactly. You know, and I think that obviously the in-car view on the kind of later games is brilliant. You know, the whole interior's detailed and the leather on the steering wheel and the gloves and the driver's hands and all that. But in terms of as a basic concept, as a basic idea, as an execution in the game, I it's a good point. I was trying to think if Gran Turismo 3 on PS2 had it, but I didn't.
It wasn't
until like your PS360 era that you actually started.
Pretty sure
seeing
like the Need for Speeds games didn't either. Fairly certain. Like what were the big ones? The big neon, the big like Too Fast, Too Furious ones, Need for Speed ones. Can't remember what they were.
Most Wanted.
I'm not sure. Is it Most Wanted? I thought it was something else. But
Most Wanted was the one that launched with the 360.
It was what I'm thinking about, the PS2 ones.
PS2 ones. Underground.
That's the one. Yeah. You know, they were massive games. They didn't have it in. I'm thinking like Test Drive maybe, but even then I don't think that they did. So it's a massive achievement, you know. I do wonder whether, I've never been able to see it, whether you can actually see the armed in other views. I don't think you can. They're just added when you move into that camera view, but they're fantastic. Obviously, there's only about four colours on the arms, and then they look like you're plastic now. I mean, they end up like really long because of the perspective. But it's really cool. It's really cool. The fact that
whenever you mentioned Need for Speed and I said Underground, and for some reason I had the Death and Resurrection Show by Killing Joke just came into my head there. That's a track in that game. What a tune, man.
The soundtrack to that game is phenomenal. We'll give those games that. I mean the Need for Speed Underground stuff was pretty good. The first and the second one. They were peak Need for Speed. Oh, superb games. See, we're not just about the Sega racing games here on the Sega Gator, guys. We've got a broad acceptance and love for racing games in general.
We've played
Underground was great.
We've played a lot of shit, mate. We've owned and played a lot of shit. It's like I had Need for Speed Underground. I got that on my PSP that I'd imported, and also had the OG Xbox version. And I put a lot of time into that. I had a red and green Supra in that, and it was like pimped out to absolute hell. And this thing went like the clappers, man. But I just remember that song, that the Death and Resurrection Show by Killing Joke. That was just popped into my head. And I've ever said Underground. It's like, oh, it's so good. What a
The
brilliant
Underground's
game.
one of those games, just like you say about Crazy Taxi. It's very much a game of its time. Those two games, you couldn't make them today.
No.
And they are peak, Fast and Furious before it became some sort of weird action spy series. It's when it was about the cars. It's peak, exhibit. Hey, yo, dog, you like a PSP? Well, we got a PSP to come out of your PSP in your car.
Mate, whenever they started taking cars into space to knock out satellites, right? I'm sorry, I get that so farty, fuck, man, honestly. Like, come on. I remember, this is a total tangent. This is it, Fast X, or the last one, right?
Fast X, yeah.
I mean, why my good mates Mark put up on Facebook whenever it came out, like to watch on Sky, about to watch the new Fast and Furious movie. Don't think I should because I think it's going to be shit, but I'll give it a go and see. 3 hours later, he puts another post up. Yeah, I was right. I shouldn't have bothered. Fast 10 was shit. It's like, honestly, it's like. Whenever they started taking cars into space and all that stuff, they're wearing space suits, makeshift space.
I
I'm like,
know.
no, man, come on, just let it be. Come on, but no.
It's just turn your brain off. I kind of enjoy them, as stupid as they are. There was the one where they're fighting with the two poles at the end. I can't remember what one that is. It might have been the last one with Paul Walker in. And then I was like, it's got lightsabers. It's like they're fighting with lightsabers. And I went into YouTube, obviously, typed in Fast and Furious 6 or whatever, or the whatever it was, and typed in lightsabers after, and someone has superimposed like lightsabers into Vin Diesel and the other guy's hands. And, like, one of them is like vroom, vroom, vroom. Anyway, that's a hell of a tangent.
A massive tangent, mate, because Vin Diesel, talking to him, you know what I watched for the first time in ages? Triple X. I live for this shit. With the guy,
Oh, God.
the villains get the best line ever in that. Everything's okay with enough vodka. I was like, well said, my man. There we
That was
go.
meant to be the American James Bond at one point. I remember them saying that.
So there you go. Brilliant.
Early 2000s, mate. They
What
did
a
have
time.
they did have they, it did have a personality, didn't it? It
What a
did have.
time. Early to mid-20s, man, living in early to mid-2000s. What a time to be alive, man. Expendable income and just the most craziest batshit stuff to like watch and listen to and play. Superb, great times.
I
Mate,
know, I
tangent
know.
over, virtua racing. There we go.
Virtual racing. But yeah, the Mega Drive port, absolutely superb. The fact that it comes to the Mega Drive, a little 16-bit console made in 1988, just with the help of an additional chip, is able to replicate, obviously, with a lot of compromises, draw distance, geometry counts, color, sound, everything is downgraded. But it's content complete compared to the arcade. It's all there. You've got all three tracks. You've got all four views. You've got the music obviously downgraded, but it's even insanity. It's even got a two-player split screen mode, which is outrageous.
Well, imagine doing the first person view, the cockpit view, and split screen.
Yeah.
It's like,
I mean, it's letterboxed as it is, isn't it?
aye, that'd be chaos. I mean, I just plug in the two pads and have a laugh and see how that looks. Just start it
Yeah.
up and just go and have a look. Mad.
But one thing I will say is that there was a lot of it was well received, despite the content, and a lot of the reviews do mention lack of content and the higher price. But it was viewed extremely well, and it was, as far as I recall, it was quite popular, especially in the US. G to the Next Level, who's prolific Sega content creator, actually tells the story of how he entered a virtual racing tournament and won, which is pretty cool. So there was like a whole scene over there. It's just great that all existed, and that it went down so well. So even though in the arcade, virtual racing's time in the sun, on top of the podium, so to speak, was short. It really did get a second lease of life in the home, and I think that that goes for the fact that it also became a launch title for the 32X, which again, that's a brilliant port. And I think, have you managed to play that one via emulation at all?
I have not, mate. I have not. I need to look at getting some 32X emulation going because I've not played that one at all.
Yeah, it's again, it's absolutely fantastic, and it's one where I think, okay, you've got the SVP, and then you've got the 32X, and it plays at a pretty solid 20 frames per second, which, you know, where have we heard that frame rate before? So same frame rate as Daytona USA. Interestingly, made by the Sega Rally home port team, or members of it. So it's got the two additional tracks, which I don't think they're as good as the arcade originals, but they kind of fit quite well. It's not like the Saturn port where you've got the backgrounds in the Saturn port are strange, and I don't think it all kind of gels together. Whereas the Spectre Export port, it felt like quite natural, and it plays pretty much like the arcade. You know, it's the Mega Drive version, but with greater geometry, better colors, better music, better frame rate, and overall just an absolutely fantastic port. It's one of those games that's worth playing. Is there a game worth getting a 32X port? Possibly. That Star Wars Arcade Virtua Fighter, maybe Chaotix. Some big offs, but it's if you've got a 32X, it's definitely one people should own. I think John Linneman, have you seen his Virtua Racing video? I think he says that the 32X port was one that he likes a lot, or may have been his favourite for a period.
So like, maybe we'll just buy a couple of Neptunes off of Argan whenever he gets them. But 600 quid a piece or something, probably. But it's mad that they've actually managed to recreate them as well. Absolute madness.
I know. It's amazing that they got the board and you got the shell now. And then obviously is it the NP one? I can't remember now, but we did a video on it a couple of months ago, the Brazilian console that they're making.
We
can play like a Neptune. So yeah, it's definitely one worth playing on there. Obviously, what came next was the Sega Saturn port, which we touched on. And then you had the PS2 port. Mate, you've been putting that through its paces, haven't you, via emulation?
As I say, on the MacBook, I had PCSX or PSEX. What's it called? I don't know. I wanted to just take... Where is that?
PCSX2.
Aye, PCSX2. There we go. And that emulation isn't bad. There is another one called Ether SX, which I've managed to get my hands on. Development on that stopped and it got kind of taken down for whatever reason. But, on the internet, nothing is gone once it's deleted. So someone on a Reddit shared a link to an archive.org. Like, it's an archiver, a web archiver on archive.org. And basically you can put in old websites and it just literally brings up caches of the website, and the Mac version of Ether SX was there on there. So I've been playing that. Runs better. It's tailor-made basically for Apple Silicon ARM Macs, so it runs a bit smoother. Not that the emulation was bad on, PCSX 2 at all. There was some weak kind of glitches, but the PS2 version, it's also the Sega Ages 2500 edition of it, very, very slick, visually, just kind of takes it up a notch, it kind of modernizes it a bit, runs as slick as you like, handling feels, great. I've got a wee kind of Switch Pro style controller that I got off Amazon. Just didn't want to spend a lot of money on a controller to play on the computer at this point, so I just picked that up for 20 quid, but it plays great. It must have been really kind of funny at that time, because a lot of these kind of Sega Ages 2500 games, you'd fight in Vipers, you'd Virtua Fighter 2. Did Virtual On come over as well?
I feel like it did.
I think Last Bronx came over as well.
Last Bronx, definitely.
Yeah. So you were kind of getting to see at that point, games that were on Sega Saturn, they were finally getting realized in the home, arcade perfect. It's a great version. I've had fun with it. I've been playing it on the train to work and kind of people glancing and sure, but jog people's memories. Remember this game? you nosy bastard. But it's a great version, mate. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it's I've got it. It didn't, obviously, we didn't get the Sega Ages 2500 collection over here, but we did get the Sega Arcade Classics Collection. I think that's the name. For some reason, like that, it's escaping me right now. But I think it's Sega Arcade Classics Collection. We've got a selection of our 2500 games on there, like the appalling Golden Axe port. You've got that strange, I think, Bonanza Brothers. You've got a few others. You've got Fantasy Zone, which is okay. You've got Outrun, which is weird, but actually kind of decent. And Virtual Racing is the highlight of the package. I think it was called Virtual Racing Flat Out somewhere, maybe in the US.
It has got a weird name on it. The ROM that I've got completely legally had a name on it. But I say the PS2 version was fine. You know, Virtual Racing Flat Out, Sega Ages 2500. It was volume 8.
Yeah.
So
it's quite early on.
Three extra courses and 4 new cars that you get in it as well. So there's extra content in there too.
Yeah, I mean it's solid. Really enjoyable. I don't think it's, I like it less than the 32X version just because I think it plays noticeably differently to kind of the arcade. I think some of that might be the fact that it plays at, obviously the arcade original was 30 frames per second, whereas the PS2 version, as you say, it's really slick, and I think that's been, you know, the frame has been doubled to 60.
Right.
It introduces some visual stuff that's like, it's kind of impressive, but it's also kind of distracting the way that the shadows work and everything. The main thing is
Barks
the handling,
and shit
but
as well, but but flashy.
But honestly, Mr. Thunderwing, I've got a bone to pick with him because he made a video about virtual racing, and he said he was, you know, in the way that he does, is like the noise that your car makes is absolutely atrocious. And as soon as he pointed it out, I can't not hear it. And whenever I play it now, it's like, and I'm just like, I can't. I've just got to stop. I don't know why it sounds like it does compared to like all the other versions of virtual racing.
What made that even better is that Zoom's noise cancellation has like cancelled out the top and bottom end of that. So all I've heard is like what sounded like a fly buzzing past. Oh, that's all I got there. It was like, so.
Oh, well, listeners, viewers, Zoom has done you a favor there. But yeah, it's great. I mean, it's good that it got that kind of second lease of life on the PlayStation 2. But it's not really the best place to play. It does a lot of things that are great. The frame rate is absolutely lovely. Some of the visual effects and kind of the time of day settings that you get in there are fantastic. And honestly, I think playing some of the courses at sunset, you know, it really just works. It looks beautiful at times. But there's other bits that just don't quite work the way they kind of should do. I think because of the changes that they made. It's one of those ones where it's not quite kind of the Saturn version different, but I think it's one of those games where it's like you'd never play it instead of any other version, but you'd certainly play it in addition to. It kind of complements the other ones, I think.
Aye, if you've got access to the arcade version, excuse me, via like a MAME or any kind of emulation or whatnot, then you would always plump for the original every time.
Yeah.
You know, possibly even the 32X port again, because it's as daft that you would see you want to go down in terms of resolution. But again, like with Saturn Daytona, like with Sega Rally, on the Sega hardware, it's the handling. They nailed the they have put the feeling and sensation and weight of an arcade steering wheel into a D-pad, and that's key. And again, I think obviously on Virtual Racing Flat Out, playing it on that kind of Wii controller I've got, yeah, the kind of the dead zone and whatnot and the analog sticks, I didn't go to the settings to see if you can change the sensitivity. I imagine that you can, that might help out, but it does feel, again, like Sega Rally does on PS2, it feels more twitchy, you know.
Yeah.
That it's Virtual Racing's already unforgiving, as we've said. You're adding a little bit of kind of more twitchy controls in there, it just makes it that wee bit extra kind of more challenging. I agree. I would, you know, if you only had that version and you wanted to play Virtual Racing, fine, brilliant. But if you've got the option to go back and play the 32X version, like obviously Dan's played it a lot more. I've never touched it, but I can. He's a man of virtue here. You know, he knows his stuff. If he's vouching for it, then it is lovely. VR Deluxe, no less.
Virtual Racing Deluxe, yeah.
Aye, but I would say going with Sega's kind of history of their arcade ports in the home and what they do in terms of the sheer handling and getting the feel of it. If you had the option, I would definitely go for one of those versions. But again, PS2 version, looks lovely, runs lovely, adds extra content, extra kind of visual effects, some jarring, some not, but it's not too bad, mate.
Yes, it's great, as I say. But you've hit the nail on the head there, mate. And it's crazy that you'd play a version where the frame rate is essentially a third, but the handling still works. And I think it's as you say, you know, it's Sega Rally on PS2 versus Sega Saturn, or even Daytona USA on Dreamcast versus Daytona USA on the Saturn. It's that sort of deal. You know, Daytona USA on the Saturn is great. I love it a little bit more than you do, I think, even with especially with the default hand. But it's not quite right, not quite the original. But one version that we did both play, and which is, as far as home ports are concerned, it probably is the ultimate home port, is the Switch port.
Yeah.
Just gorgeous. And I think it's on sale quite a lot of the time for like £1.79 or something ridiculous.
I got it for £2. Yeah. £2 for Virtua Racing. What's the world coming to? Madness. Aye, as I said earlier in the show, mate, whenever I had a Switch Lite a few years ago, we bought it for the house for everyone to have access to. But it was predominantly me that played it. And then it just kind of sat and kind of gathered dust. So we eventually got rid of it. But it's a brilliant port. You know, colours pop, you know, you play it on that Switch screen, it's vibrant, it runs great, handles great, it's the ultimate home version without a shadow of a doubt.
You can't knock it, because obviously it's M2 that did the port.
Yep.
As much as we say, the Mega Drive version nailed the handling, the 32X version nailed the handling, maybe the 32X version's got a little bit of extra content, but wow, the Switch port, full 60 frames per second, arcade handling absolutely intact, 8-player split screen, it's the works. It's an absolute dream to play. You know, what more can you say about it other than that? It's just phenomenal. If you are a Sega fan and you're watching or listening to this right now and you don't own that but own a Switch, I mean, there's what, 100 million Switches in the world right now? So chances are, if you're a gamer, you might have one. If you haven't got Virtual Racing, what the hell are you doing?
And it is, it's always on sale. There's two games that are always on sale, and it's Panzer Dragoon Remake and Virtua Racing on the Switch. That's the two. There's like an advert comes on X and you're like, oh, it's on sale again. It's like DFS, mate. It's always on sale. You know what I mean? Never ends.
Irony is, like, 1992, a quid ago. It probably equates to about £2 now. For the cost of what would be a go on the Virtual Racing cabinet, you can get a version on your Switch to play forever. A legal version, which is arguably better than the arcade original because it plays at a full 60 frames per second. I don't know if there's any Switch wheels or anything like that. I mean, that would be ideal. But
and just a caveat there, because we've just said we would happily go back to a third of the frame rate on inferior versions, you know, rather than play the PS2 version, and they'll be going, oh, so because it's Nintendo, you're happy to play it 60, because it's Sony, you're happy to go back a third. No, because the Switch version has the arcade handling. So it's got 60 FPS and the arcade handling, whereas the PS2 version, it's 60 FPS, but it doesn't quite, it's twitchy. So just to clear that up before we get called out.
Yeah, and it's not your analog stick settings. It generally is twitchier than the original. I found that with the standard PS2 pad and the wireless pad that I've got for the PS2 as well. Both of them, same deal. Just is what it is. And I think if you get used to the PS2 version, you will enjoy it. And there's a great game in there, great new tracks, great new visuals. But yeah, you probably wouldn't choose that over definitively over the Fates/Rex version, but the Switch version, because as you say, mate, nails the arcade handling made by M2. It's, you know, polygon for polygon, right, quad for quad, pixel for pixel. It is the arcade game, but running at 60, double the frame rate, with, you know, high running at like, it's probably 720p or 1080p, whatever it is on the Switch. It just looks absolutely gorgeous. And yeah, just wish we got more flat shaded games like that. But there are a few.
I wish we'd get more Sega Ages stuff on Switch, on all, even on mobile. It's like Sega Ages, whenever they came out, like the whole idea of it was to bring like games from all the past platforms onto mobile and Switch and other consoles, and it just died in its arse. It's like again, M2 do phenomenal work. Like, why don't we have Sega Rally on Switch? Why don't we have Sega Touring Car on Switch? Obviously, there's license issues to overcome with, but M2 could easily blank off textures or blur them or something to get around it. You know, it's, again, Sega Ages had so much promise at the start, and then just like the Twitter account, it's just went by the wayside, you know.
It's so bizarre because you've got, yeah, Sega Forever, which, yeah, you know, obviously I think the stuff that Danny did for the Sega website,
amazing,
and Sega social media was absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
But as far as the actual games that came out of that whole concept were concerned, it's the same as Sega Ages for the Switch. It actually just felt like, you ever see that South Park episode, Cartoon Wars, where they take the piss out of The Simpsons and South Park, and they say that South Park is just random jokes, and it's like a bunch of manatees that move a bunch of beach balls around in a pond, and whatever the beach ball comes out is the joke they're going to make in Family Guy. Well, that's kind of how I think that Sega's thought process came when they were putting the just random balls, you know. You'd have a great one with virtual racing, and then it's like, oh, how about playing Trent R puzzle games? Or, you know, you'd get also, then you get Phantasy Star, fantastic, and then you get another weird one. It was just like, you're not picking the right games, you know, hook people in. And if there are the obscure ones, we want to see the obscure ones, but you're not going to get the same success that you are putting something like the Hedgehog on there. So why don't you just put them in a collection, or why don't you cut the price of them? And it was just like, it was so haphazard that they just didn't follow it through properly, and it just felt kind of half-hearted.
Aye,
which is a shame, because could have had Sega Racing Classic or something on there. You know, obviously we've got Sega Racing Classic 2 eventually, but in the Like a Dragon, and that's the frustration as well, because that guy got the got an award recently for putting Sega Racing Classic in the Like a Dragon games and the Yakuza games, but it's like, what they're going to be used for apart from putting arcade games and Yakuza games? Like, put them on a console, put them on a disc.
Aye, sell us all of the games that are in Yakuza's arcades on a package. I don't want Yakuza's are great games. I don't have time to go wandering around arcades finding them and save my game outside the front doors of an arcade and load up another game to play the game I want to play. Just give us a collection. Like, you've done the hard work. They're there.
Yeah.
Put them on a fucking disc, man. It's or even if you have it digital only, well, God forbid, right? But if the collection's digital only, you could even update it. Like, whenever you bring out a new Yakuza game, if you add another game to the arcade,
yeah,
the DLC, buy that game, add it to your collection. You know, it's just, how do we think of these kind of ideas, and like Sega's going, nah, don't think so, don't think that will sell.
No, I mean, it's like Yakuza, like a dragon guide, and the man who erased his name, and that's the one with Daytona USA 2, but it's also got Sega Master System games in there, but the Sega Master System games are over here. Daytona USA is over here, but other Sega arcade games are over there. So it's not like you can save your game outside one place. You have to run around the open world to access everything. So come on, Sega, please.
Collection. Just make a collection. please.
Oh, I've been banging that drum, I ain't long enough. But anyway, mate, as far, you know, Virtua Racing came to the Switch, how long ago was that? That would have been, just take a look. Say Nintendo Switch, 2019. So that was 5 years ago.
Wow.
5 years since we had a port of Virtua Racing. So Sega have obviously left a gaping hole for the flat-shaded polygon racer. But thankfully, we've got some talented indie developers that have stepped in and laid their claim to it. And we've seen a few decent races come out of it. I think the first one was Hot Shot Racing.
Yes. Yeah.
Did you get a chance to play that one?
I'm sure, was it Xbox I played it? Was that on Game Pass briefly?
It wasn't Game Pass,
that's,
yeah.
That's what I've played it. Yeah, I played it on there. Again, very nice. Very nice. Lots of nice little kind of Easter eggs and nods to Sega arcade games. Captures the feel quite nicely. But I not played that one in a long time. But I never, you mentioned the name came up there. I was like, I've definitely played that on Game Pass.
Yeah, I played it on Game Pass as well. For some reason, I didn't pick up the full game for whatever reason, even though I thought I need to pick up the full game. But I played it. When it got pretty far into the championship mode, I think, and I'm winging it here because I don't have it written down, but I'm pretty sure that it was kind of an indie game, and then Sumo Digital actually helped out in the end.
Pretty sure that's the case.
Take a look. It really does feel so so refined, and it's pretty feature rich. So it's a great game. I think that it's not quite a kind of virtual racing sort of game. It's got like the boost mechanic, isn't it? So there's a few different kind of, it's not like a pure racer, much like virtual racing is. It's kind of a combination of things. It's got like a little bit of Ridge Racer in there as well. But
yeah, it's trying to take a wee kind of bits and pieces, also try to make a kind of homage to the greats of 90s arcade racers, essentially. But it did the job. It hit a kind of spot. It kind of tickled in the nostalgia bone, so to speak.
It really did. You know, the visuals was kind of spot on. A lot more geometry in there than you would see in a kind of a 90s game, but it was still fantastic to play. Can't find the details about who made. Oh no, Sumo Digital did. Sumo Digital did help out with the development of this one, which is obviously Sumo, great racing games, Outrun 2 port, Sega All-Stars Racing and Sonic Team Racing games. Superb. It's a very talented team. But yeah, it's fantastic. Great visuals. Tickles the nostalgia bone. Doesn't quite give you a virtual racing kind of experience, but does, yeah, like you say, mate, gives you something of that era.
Aye.
That tickles the nostalgia bone.
Taps in, did the job. But I say we've all kind of hoped that we would get like a Virtua Racing 2, and it hasn't come. So there's two kind of main, you know, flat shaded polygon inspired racers that are doing the rounds just now in the community.
Yeah, so both of them are in early access, and I think where should we start? Super Polygon Grand Prix was the one that came out first from Roz Games. We've reviewed that with this one on the channel. Mm-hmm. And it's a great racer, quite different to virtual racing. I think a few of the kind of the handling and the visual choices do set it apart. And I think it's important sometimes to set it apart and have its own identity. If you're looking for kind of a pure racing experience, I think it was advertised a lot. Some of the kind of the promotional tweets and stuff that said it was virtual racing on steroids. I think it's quite different to virtual racing. And I think that kind of works to its benefit and its detriment, depending on what it is that you're looking for. But mm-hmm. It's one that I quite enjoyed. I don't think you've played this one, have you, mate? But what did you think from what you saw?
The first thing that came to mind when I seen it was, obviously, virtual racing has had an influence, and 90s arcade racers as a whole have had an influence. But the visual style very much reminds me of Horizon Chase on iOS.
Which, yes, that's again, another one.
Which isn't a bad thing. Horizon Chase is phenomenal. It's had, you know, numerous updates over the years. I play it on my iPhone 15 Plus, and it looks absolutely amazing. Plays great. It's a wonderful, wonderful game. But I think, you know, SPGP it kind of, whether it's intentional or whether it's just by, you know, graphical choice that Ross has made, it gives off that feel. I've seen some of the feedback on it saying that they found the smoke from the back of the tires to be quite distracting, but again, I could see what Ross was aiming for in that. You know, Sega games and all arcade games always try to do something big and flashy and visual to kind of just A, to show off the hardware, and B, just to kind of be out there and loud. And I think that's what he's doing. I think maybe it's overused a bit. It doesn't have to be on every turn that you take. Maybe as you take off in a line, have it on there. But I'm watching a video of it, you know, as we're talking right now. It looks great, you know. The car design is very different to the one we're going to talk about, very different to Virtua Racing. The wheels on it, on the cockpit view, I don't know if it's because of the kind of the angle of the camera that's done it, but even in the third person view, the wheels do look a bit more oval. It looks more like a tank, for lack of a better kind of word. It looks very much like kind of treads as opposed to.
I think it is. I think it's the perspective.
I think that's what does it. But I mean. You've got to admire, also, the guy has told his story, you know, Roz has told his story on you know, Twitter, that, you know, obviously he was made redundant and he found himself wondering what to do with his life, and he decided, you know, why not? Let's make a computer game, you know, or make a video game. And he's...
A lot of passion for classic arcade races as well.
You know what I mean? So he's...
Talking about classic Sega races, very passionate about.
He's chasing his dream and he's putting a product out there. And to be fair to him, you know, it went out in early access, people were refunding the game, people were criticising it, and he didn't throw the toys at the pram, he didn't snap back at anybody, he answered everybody and said, you know, look, hands up, I'll take all the feedback on board, and he's releasing updates and he's addressing these things, so, you know, he's listening.
Very prolific with the updates as well.
Aye, he's responding to the community, which is key. You know, we've already spoken, you know, Overjump Rally, for example, you know, we've spoke about it, you know, numerous times, that it's someone who he doesn't respond well to criticism, takes it far too personally, thinks he knows better than, you know, other people he wants to buy his game if it ever gets finished. Whereas Roz is very much, as you say, he's prolific, he's listening to feedback and he's working on the updates. So fair play to him for that.
Yeah, I mean, from my personal experience, you know, I bought it day one when it came out to early access, but the video came out on the channel with my thoughts on there. So I won't spend too long kind of repeating what I said, but the updates really have made a difference. And, you know, I think it's great. You know, I think Roz has had a vision and he's delivered on it. And I think it's incredibly fun. There were a few things in terms of design choices that I wasn't a massive fan on, but that's just personal preference. I definitely recommend that anyone who enjoys retro styled races definitely gives it a try, takes a look. It's in early access. There's a bunch of content for it. It's a fantastic racing game. It's, if you're going in there expecting it to be kind of virtual racing, I would say it's not. If you go in there with an open mind, looking for an arcade racer, that very much evokes. And again, mate, Horizon Chase Turbo is a great game. I've completely forgotten about that. I was thinking, is there another one? Horizon Chase Turbo is a fantastic game. And it very much is of that kind of ilk. And it just feels, what I love about Super Polygon Grand Prix is it just feels white knuckle. And a lot of it is because of the perspective and the design choices that Roz has made, which in which case it's a great success in that sense. It's a fantastic game. Definitely a great polygonal flat shaded racer. So definitely check out that. And then the last one, which has just popped into early access, it'll be tomorrow at the time of recording, but we've actually had a chance to give that a go, had a demo out, is Super Retro GP. And this one, mate, it just blows my mind how, you know, I think I've got to give credit to the other three games because obviously they've all had, as I say, they've had a vision and they've delivered what they've wanted to do. And this one's had a vision. The vision for this one is quite different in that it's basically just Virtual Racing 2, which is phenomenal. And the fact that DDI, you know, had the great DDI rally game, which was, it wasn't designed to basically ape Sega Rally. It's kind of its own thing, but obviously very Sega Rally influence. But to kind of make Super Retro GP, and for it to stick so rigidly to the virtual racing formula and absolutely nail it, I just can't praise this one enough. It's just absolutely phenomenal.
Oh, mate, it's sensational. And I've had the chance to play it, and I'm not on Windows, so take from that what you will. I don't believe it's going ahead, so I don't think there'll be any issue with me saying it. I had been helping DDI playtest a macOS version of it. There's been some kind of challenges in the way that macOS detects display settings, and it was throwing up some really weird errors where if Retina display support was enabled, then it wouldn't like let you see the graphical settings. And you know, we worked through multiple builds and tried different settings, and it wasn't playing ball. So the Mac version is on the back burner for now. But I have, excuse me, had a chance to play the demo of it, two tracks, and it's absolutely sensational. You know, running on the M3 MacBook Air, you know, it screams, you know, at full pelt resolution, 60 FPS, you know, all visual effects turned on, you know, ambient occlusion, you know, you name it, everything's turned on, and it looks absolutely glorious. It plays phenomenal. It captures the spirit of Virtua Racing to a T. That cockpit view that we spoke about earlier, I love playing Super Retro GP, and I've said that, whereas I was talking to DDI, you know, and the DMs and stuff, was like, the wheels, mate, the wheels have got those lovely sharp, you know,
they're like Heatrons, aren't they? Just like the original.
And they spin back to go forward as you pick up pace and go through gears. And again, it's got that low view, and you've got to learn the tracks. See, whenever you, there's a bit in the main track on Super Retro GP, and it's after you kind of, you're about to come up to a tunnel, and there's a kind of little right-left chicane before a long right-hander bend towards the tunnel, actually. See, if you're in cockpit view and you nail that whole series of turns, oh, mate, it's as good as anything in any racing game. It's because the speed that the thing moves at, and it's got that iconography as well. It's got the trees, it's got the embankments at the side of the road, it's got the runoff areas, it's got that kind of not as unforgiving. In terms of whenever you run off, you can kind of bounce back onto the track. The AI in the game is absolutely solid. They will hit you out the way, and it's not as if they're just being clumsy. Like, it's almost Daytona-like. They'll jostle for position with you. They'll take you out. They'll read your line. They'll cut you off. It's absolutely phenomenal. And I've not played, obviously, Rosie's game, but all I've got to go on is the kind of footage of watching it. But for me, and as great a job as Roz has done, like Super Retro GP just ticks all the boxes for what I'm looking for from a flat shaded polygon racer. It's absolutely sensational. If the Mac port never comes to be, then I've got that wee demo with two tracks, mate. I'll happily play that. It is absolutely brilliant.
It is, and I think obviously we're going to have a preference for the game that sticks, that gives us that virtual racing vibe. I think both games are different enough and good enough to exist side by side. I definitely encourage anyone to try both of them out. As well as Horizon Chase Turbo, as well as Hot Shot Racing. All four of them, the spirit of virtual racing is living and breathing in all of them. But obviously, Super Retro GP is almost painstakingly the virtual racing 2 that we never got. So, you know, there'll be videos up on the channel. We've got the view on the demo. It was a couple of months back. And then by the time that this is out, there will obviously be the early access impressions. So check those out as well. But yeah, it's great that we've got these games, mate, and that we the spirit of virtual racing and Sega racing in general, as you know, all these guys, you know, these indie developers, you know, whether it's Roz, whether it's DDI, whether it's the guys behind Hot Shot Racing, they're all obviously Sega fans. And you can feel that in all of these games in their own way. And that all just comes back to bring it full circle to the legend that is Virtual Racing, that, you know, essentially changed the racing genre almost overnight. You know, we've talked before that it was more evolution than revolution compared to something like Virtua Fighter, but it's clear that it has left a legacy.
Oh, aye. And that's that, mate. It's a combination of the impact that the games have made on these guys and us as gamers in kind of formative years, whether it's teenage years, early 20s, you've been into these arcades, you've seen these games, and they've left an impact. And then as these guys have got older and Sega have left a gap in the market by not acknowledging their heritage, by not giving us the games that they're sitting on, these IPs and these games that Virtua Racing has no license. Like, okay, we've got the Switch port, but why isn't it on Xbox? Why isn't it on PlayStation? It's why isn't there a proper sequel? And these guys have went, well, you know what? And especially in the case of Super Retro GP, like DDI has went, well, if you're not going to make the sequel, I'll do it. You know, and again, it says a lot for the legacy and passion that these guys, you know, obviously the game has given these guys, that they want to use their skill set to recreate that, to do it themselves. If that's not legacy, mate, I don't know what is. You know, it was out there, you know, 1992, and we've still got people in 2024 trying to recapture the magic of it. That's legacy, mate.
That really is, and that's a legacy like no other, and I think that's a great place to end the conversation, mate. So thank you for coming back. It's been an absolute pleasure, and people can look forward to more of this traditional Sega Guys content coming, and we've got a few guests lined up as well coming down. But listen, Virtual Racing, do you agree? Is it a legend? Is it an icon just as we feel it is? What's your favourite port? And if you've played any of the games that have been inspired by Virtual Racing, which ones are your favourite? Love to hear your thoughts either in the comments below or join the discussion on the Sega Guys Discord. If you've enjoyed this video, then please give us a like and a subscribe, because that really helps the channel. And hit that bell for notifications for all future Sega Guys content. And if you want to be extra mega, you can become a Sega Guys member on YouTube from as little as 99p with a bunch of extra perks, such as having your name read out in the credits, just like James is going to do right now for our premium members.
Certainly, our premium members for today are Sega Saturn Lad, G-Man, Steph Peaks, I Am Mikowski, Craig Williamson, Resident SD, P-Wall, Tom Fum, Peter007, Andy Mackey, Nick Tullock, and of course our brothers at Sega Saturn, Shiro. Thank you very much to all our members and subscribers for your continued support. It means a lot to us. We are extremely humbled, I say, as we, you know, have the surge towards 8,000 subscribers. Let's try and get 10k for Christmas, shall we? As a wee Christmas present for the Sega guys, 10k for Christmas. But no, honestly, everyone who supports us, whether you're a core member, premium member, follower, subscriber, member, wherever you are, if you share our content, watch what we do, enjoy what we do, spread the word, it means a lot. So thank you very much.
Yeah, just to echo that, you know, even if you're just swinging by, we hope that you'll visit again soon. But yeah, we'd love for you to stay with us more often. And for all our regular subscribers and members, we'll see you next time on the Sega side.
Nika!
Congratulations!